Safety first.
Welcome to another episode of Safety First, TÜV SÜD's podcast on cybersecurity and more. I'm Sabine Krümer, and today we have a very special guest. It's Natalia Oropesa. She's Chief Cybersecurity Officer and Chief Diversity Officer of Siemens AG. Welcome, Natalia. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me, Sabine. I am delighted to be here with you today.
Thanks so much for taking your time, Natalia. In your role as Chief Cybersecurity Officer at Siemens, you are responsible for all global cybersecurity activities. And in addition, since May 2020, you have the role of Chief Diversity Officer. This sounds like a very interesting combination to me, and we will talk more about that later. But to begin with, let's talk about Siemens and its activities in the Charter of Trust. 3 years ago, Siemens initiated the Charter of Trust together with the Munich Security Conference as a global cybersecurity alliance. And meanwhile, there are 17 member organizations. What was the initial motivation to start the Charter of Trust, Natalia?
Yeah, let me tell you, Sabine. So the digital transformation that is currently happening in our societies can only succeed if security of data and connected system is guaranteed. And you know that the hackers are very intelligent, but they are also very fast. Mm-hmm. And therefore, no company can do this alone.
Correct.
And that was the motivation why we decided to join forces and collaborate with the major industry players. And the Charter of Trust was created to build a community of trust and confidence among the members. And of course, this mutual trust allows us to engage and purpose on three specific goals. Protect the data of the individuals and companies, avert harm from people, companies, and infrastructures, and establish a reliable basis where confidence in a network digital world can take root and grow. In other words, we want the digital world to be secure for our society. Mm-hmm. And we have also refreshed them according the three dimensions to reflect our holistic approach regarding technology. And our goal is to establish and pilot and adopt global requirements and best practices from a political perspective as well. So the political perspective is also included. We aim to influence, to shape the political debate worldwide on cyber topics. And in the business arena, our goal is focused on successfully putting security at the core of digital business models. So this is, in a nutshell, the answer to your question, what was the motivation and what is it that we are pursuing in the Charter of Trust?
So, Natalia, this sounds really like a lot of work to do. And there are also many member organizations, like 17. And these are global companies like IBM, Airbus, Infineon, Telecom, Atos, and also associated partners like the Hasso-Plattner Institute and TU Graz. So how do you work together in the Charter of Trust? How is this to be organized?
Well, we regularly meet. We have as well task force initiated with different groups working on different topics. Then we hear the results of the different working groups, and then we take different kind of decisions. And I think we are going to talk about some of the major principles that we have and the results that we are providing with those. So maybe I can explain you there how it works so that you have a better understanding of it. How do we organize? But let me tell you, something I mentioned first, that what we are doing is to have a setup where we can cooperate and co-create. And this was actually one of the initial tasks that was important to do in the Charter of Trust. So we had to set the basis as well, the legal basis, so that we could cooperate and that we could exchange information, because we were the cybersecurity officers of the different companies. So we needed to set the basis for this exchange to be legal and productive. And this was kind of the first step we did. So we did that in record time, to be honest with you, considering that we all have big legal departments and complex processes to do. So this was like the very beginning. I am always talking about this very proudly because it was a step to do, and we did that.
Yes, yes. In record time, as you said.
Yeah.
Very impressive. And now we look at 3 years. I mean, there's been a lot achieved also. We'll talk about that later. But first, after you explain the three major goals, there are these 10 principles of the Charter of Trust. And that's also how the task forces are then organized. But there's a special principle that Siemens already did to take much action already. So I think it's principle 2, right?
That's correct.
And what is it about and what happened so far?
Principle 2 is about supply chain security. And you asked me before, how do you organize to work? And one of the first things that we did in the Charter of Trust so that we are able to be effective and efficient is to set priorities. So we all agree at the beginning that the principle 2 was one of the most important ones, if not the most important one. And why is it that it's the most important one? This is because 60% of the attacks are starting in the supply chain of the different products and companies. So that's something that you can read in the press. I mean, very famous at this moment is the SolarWind attack. And of course, a lot of companies are using that kind of software, and some of the companies are already affected from that attack. So from another perspective, let me tell you that the system is as strong as the weakest point. So we are looking at that. The attackers have a lot of common sense, and they will know that in, let's say, poor countries, the investment in the infrastructure is not enough. So the security is not enough, just by common sense. So then many attacks we see starting in this kind of places where the infrastructure is not strong enough. And then it could be not only a country, but it could be as well a service provider, a product provider, and so on and so forth. So this was the reason we prioritize supply chain security to start with our work, right?
Yeah, this is a very interesting fact, of course. And I think it's interesting to see that Siemens and other global players really realize that they are all, this is a thing they could only solve together, and not only together as big companies, but together with the smaller companies and also with not so well equipped infrastructures. So we're all in the boat together. This leads me to the question of what exactly can the Charter of Trust really do to improve this problem?
Let me tell you the story how this started. And I was there in that meeting, and it was impressive because we, meaning the partners, met for this topic. And then the first question is, what are we doing to, let's say, rule or make a governance on the security of our providers? And then everyone was presenting their requirements towards security to our different providers. And it was kind of shock for me. So we all came with a set of 150 requirements. Some of us had bronze, silver, and gold requirements for this and that. And then looking into the content of each of the requirements, oh my goodness, I mean, some of them were so difficult to understand. So then the conclusion that we made that meeting and that day is, oh my goodness, we are making the digital providers, we are making a set of, let's we all together have 1 million of relevant suppliers. So we are making all of them crazy, because of course we recognize that we have common suppliers, number one. Number two, we ourselves are suppliers for ourselves in the supply chain. And we have to do something to end this situation. And that's why we came with the proposal of having baseline requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have 17 baseline requirements. And how these 17 baseline requirements were born was by selecting them from the standards that were already available. Because something that we don't want to do, because we don't have time to lose, I mentioned before the hackers are very fast, is we don't want to reinvent the wheel. And there are several standards out there, like the ISO 27001 or the NIST framework as a reference and so on and so forth. And there are others in Asia as well. And then we look into those standards and we select from those the ones that we can use to set up a baseline requirements, meaning this is the absolute minimum that we require in security from our relevant providers. And with that, what we are doing, if you reflect on that, is we are simplifying. You know, we are simplifying the requirements that we have for our providers to achieve security. And we are also simplifying, of course, the possibility to control those requirements in our supply chain. So for me, it's the first and already one of the big achievements that we have done in the Charter of Trust.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a really smart way to deal with this complexity that you described. And you have to get faster and have to get really going because cyber attacks are always there and even, you know, growing, as you explained. And yes, it sounds like a really, really good example how you can deal with this. So can you maybe go a bit more in detail how Siemens did this with its suppliers? How did you communicate with them and how did they react?
You know what, of course, when we developed the 17th base requirements, of course, we commit to include them in our contracts. So we manage already to include those requirements in the terms and conditions of our contracts, which means every new contract that is being closed in Siemens with any provider includes those requirements already. So that was the easy win or the easy step to do. Now, of course, we not only have new contracts, but we have existing contracts. And from that regard, we needed to talk with the providers. And of course, here again, prioritization or to set priorities is essential. So we have to recognize which are the most relevant ones for us and then talk with our providers and look into their contracts. And from that perspective, I think surprisingly, it was very well received because everyone these days recognized that cybersecurity is a priority and that by making the organizations and the suppliers more secure, we are making all of us more secure. So we are not requesting something that is out of this world with the 17 base requirements. So it was well received. I would say very little pushback. Of course, there is always some cases where someone will say, yeah, but if I do this, then I will have to change the pricing and so on and so forth. And then there is some discussion to do, yes, of course. But there is as well our offer to support them to implement it, to give them time to implement them, to evaluate the risk that we have. So it has been a very collaborative approach. And of course, we have a lot to do, but I am very positive that we have started, especially as well from an awareness perspective to increase the cybersecurity in our supply chain.
So it's interesting to hear that also the suppliers, they really see the benefits because after all, it's a lot of work, but it has to be done. So you better do it with strong partners and they can profit from your experience, of course, then. So Natalia, should we maybe talk about another principle? This is all about security by default, which it sounds very interesting also to me. So what's behind that concept?
It's my favorite one. And let me tell you, the way I like to explain this is by comparing this with the lock that you have in the suitcases. So for sure, all of us used to travel a lot, used to travel, not anymore. You know that there is those locks located in the suitcases. And guess what is the default setting of those locks?
Default is 000.
Oh, wow. So exactly. You are an expert. So probably sometimes a little bit more complex, which is 99999. And of course, there are instructions on how to change that setting. And I can tell you probably 20% of us will change that. But most of us will not change that. And this is exactly the opposite of secure by default. This will be unsecure by default, because if someone finds your suitcase, he or she will try the 000 combination or the 9999 combination, and then there you go. Now, this is exactly what we are doing. So you just imagine you could get a new suitcase with a proper combination. So let's say 5389, okay? And then in that case, your suitcase is already preset. You get attached, of course, a letter saying, here, Sabine, this is the combination for your new suitcase, and you don't have to do anything to make it secure. So now we have managed to do that suitcase secure from 0 to 100%, because now all suitcases will be secure, right? So this is the concept that we have translated to the products. So of course, one of our products doesn't have only one combination to be secure. So we are talking about passwords, for instance. And in many cases, those passwords are set by default as well to, it could be as well 0000, but it could be something like admin1 or admin0 or something like this. And what we are doing now is to set something the secure or to trigger an action from our users so that the software asks, please set up your secure password initially. So this is what we are doing with our products. And by us doing that, of course, we are making the digital world more secure, and we are making the lives of our customers much easier, believe me. So I don't know if I give you an idea about what is security by default and about how powerful it is for all of us.
So this sounds like there is a 20-80 rule, I think, that you can, with only 20% of improvements, you can really solve 80% of the problem. So this sounds a bit like that.
Absolutely. And now what I didn't tell you is what we did to achieve that. And this is very similar to what we did in the supply chain security. So we also had to agree among us what are the settings that made most sense to be set by default. And this was only by accident. We came exactly with 17 requirements of settings. So this was not that we had like as a goal to have 17, but it came like this, that we identified 17. And now there is a clear definition and there is a clear agreement among us. And this is very, very powerful, Sabine, because you know that the partners in the Charter of Trusts, we have global players. So we have someone from the US, from Europe, from Asia. So now we have managed to develop something that will have a global impact. So I think it is very, very powerful.
So this sounds really stunning that with collaboration, you really solve the problem. So this is not only about giving the rules and hoping that people will comply, but you really have to convince people that it makes sense. And what I wanted to ask you also is the Charter of Trust. What I think is very special about it, and TÜV SÜD is also an active member, is that all member companies, they really live the principles. And I think this really makes a difference to maybe other alliances or other initiatives that there are in the world. Do you agree on that? Or?
Yes, exactly. We have twice a year now a board of directors. And in that board of directors, we have the CEOs or at least board members in the meetings. And that's the meeting that we use to commit ourselves as companies to deploy what we agree in the different task forces. And that makes really, a huge help for all of us cybersecurity officers, because now we are all committed. to deploy those security requirements that we have achieved with the work of many colleagues in the Charter of Trust.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about this before. The Charter of Trust is not only, of course, relevant for the large companies, but also for the small and medium enterprises. I think this is kind of a no-brainer now that we talked. We learned from what you told us that the suppliers, they really benefit from this initiative. But what happens when smaller companies, they don't often have the resources for cybersecurity? So what can they do?
First of all, my assistant, what you already said, Sabine, that this is for everyone. It's for large companies and especially as well for SMEs. And what we do to help them is we also distribute the material, especially for SMEs. We are not kind of hiding, or it's not secret what we are achieving. So the Charter of Trust has a dual target. One, the one hand is target on large companies. It offers a forum for enriching discussions on cybersecurity topics. And besides, we provide a holistic view, not only technical, that helps them harmonize their approach to cybersecurity within all their departments and business units. But at the other hand, as well, we believe that in today's interconnected world, it's our responsibility to support the SMEs with the cybersecurity projects, especially those companies that work with us to help them. We have published our baseline requirements and guidance documents, as well as some of other useful materials. So everyone that comes to us and requests something, our providers, of course, they all get all this information from us. And we try not to grow so much, because otherwise the decision-taking process is going to be very, very difficult. So, you know, we have now these associated partners that are either consulting all of us or getting as well information from us. But we distribute everything. What we develop is for everyone. It's for the society that we are doing this.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like a mixture of leading by example and enabling others to also follow this idea and to implement it.
Yeah, I repeat, we take very serious that we do have a responsibility towards the society. So we are always happy to help, and we help as much as we can.
Mm-hmm. And looking into 2021, so we are right into it, it just started. But what are the next steps for the Charter of Trust?
So we have talked about the requirements, and that means we have agreed on the foundations, and now our priority will be to bring to life all the baseline requirements that we have already defined, mm-hmm. and make sure that we adopt all of our proposals. So we want to lead by example, as you already say, and show our stakeholders that we commit to what we say. Mm-hmm. We also need to speed up the adoption, not only adopt that, but speed on that one. And at the same time, we want to strengthen the cooperation among players in the cyber arena. And in order to do so, we invented the reinforce our partner community and promote the exchange of experiences and best practices. We are also going to use more technology, more proper social media, and when I say proper social media, I say secure one channels, so that we can really speed up this exchange that needs to happen among us partners, so that we can create more and deploy.
Okay.
And we also want to make a positive impact in society, so we will grow our ecosystem with other stakeholders, and we will strive to include cybersecurity topic in the agendas of major international events and organizations. That's always important to create and support the awareness that we need to have.
Mm-hmm. So, and as you already mentioned, Siemens takes its responsibility in the society very serious. And as cybersecurity concerns more and more also the operational technology where really production happens, would you say that the pandemic actually helped promote cybersecurity topics also in this area? Because on one hand, the threat landscape evolved, and on the other hand, the sense of urgency also increased.
Yes, the pandemic changed a lot of things, and that are impacting cybersecurity, you know. And the first thing is it is speeding up digitalization. especially in the OT, where we saw already a digitalization process happening. But now it's going to happen faster, which means for us, cybersecurity, the use of software in the OT and the connectivity is going to increase. It's increasing. Sorry, I take that back. It's not going to increase. It is increasing already. And then at the other side, this remote work. So the fact that you and me, we are doing this podcast virtually. This has changed the landscape. And to give you an idea on how drastic this change is, for sure I will say, and for sure there are some fans of Game of Thrones in the audience. And I have this picture of Jon Snow going out from the wall and into the wild. And in the same thing, this pandemic was pushing us to go out of the offices in the wild. So this has changed the IT and the infrastructure landscape completely. And what happened at the end of the day is that this wall or network that used to protect us, right? We are not longer contained into that wall anymore. And this network perimeter, that was the right term that we use to talk about the wall that was protecting us, is diluting. So it's there, but it doesn't have any effect anymore because we are not contained in that wall. So of course we need to adapt the cybersecurity to the new conditions. And if you ask me what are we in Siemens doing, I can tell you we were already in deploying Zero Trust projects. So the Zero Trust concept is about protecting the devices, protecting the identity, and increasing the access control. And that you do because you don't have this network perimeter or this wall that is protecting everyone. And in addition to that, of course, we are increasing and speeding up the protection of the OT environment. This is what we are doing. And of course, this has everything to do with the impact that we have because of the pandemic happening. You mentioned whether this was positive. And yes, of course, as a cybersecurity officer, I can tell you, I love that we do see now very clear the reason why cybersecurity needs to be a priority topic for the companies.
Yes, absolutely. I think this is really the case in so many industries and organizations that really now there is more clarity about that it can't be delayed anymore. It has really to get a real awareness also in the management level. Maybe a bit of change of topic right now. It was really so very interesting to learn about what Siemens is really actually doing in its organization. But TÜV SÜD, we are also active in a charter of trust, as I said, and we are a TIC company. This means that we are testing, inspecting, and it's all about certification and making technology more safe and secure. So this is the point where the cybersecurity comes in. So what's your opinion on that? So how can certification help companies and society in general to improve the cybersecurity?
You know, I had a conversation with a CEO the recent weeks, and he told me he cannot imagine a digital world without the proper certifications happening. And I do agree with that 100%. If we don't have certifications, then we will never manage to have the same level of security among the different products from the different providers. And the question here is what to certify and how to certify. And on that regard, this is exactly what we are doing in the Charter of Trust with the other partners and with the different task forces that we have. We are looking into what exactly needs to be certified and how, so that we don't overload our organizations with complex certifications or complex standards to be followed so that we can have certification. So this is the only way that you can make an assessment and a validation on the level of security that you need among the different components that are cooperating and correlating in an industrial environment, I will say, but not only, all over the place. So that will be my opinion, Sabine.
Okay. So another topic switch, as I mentioned before, you are also Chief Diversity Officer at Siemens. So let's talk a bit about diversity in cybersecurity. And my first question would be diversity in general among employees. In which way could this also improve cybersecurity of an organization?
Before I go straight to the specific question that you just did, let me tell you two things. Number one is, I am so honored and so happy to have these two jobs to do in Siemens. And the reason of that is because I use all my capabilities, my head, my heart, my blood, everything is now invested in Siemens. And now, why is diversity important in general, not only in cybersecurity? It is important, and it's not only about diversity, but it's about inclusion. It is important because the society is diverse. So we are men and women, Mexicans and Germans, lesbian and gays. Everyone is included in the society. And of course, we all, and we as Siemens especially, we want to serve and we want to contribute to that diverse society. And therefore, we need to assure that we are diverse and that we include our diversity and that we include every opinion, every way of thinking, and that everyone can feel that they belong to the company. And let me tell you, if me, Natalia, if I don't belong, if I don't feel that I belong, I will be easy afraid of explaining or talking about my ideas. So if I feel like I don't belong to the company because the color of my skin or because the tone of my voice or because the way I think, I will actually not express my ideas freely. And of course, the first step to make innovation and to do anything is to express our ideas and to have the certainty that they will be heard, that they will be incorporated. And this is the reason why diversity and inclusion is so important. And now if you transfer this to the cybersecurity, of course, if we want to protect a company, and finally, if we want to protect a society, we again need to reflect the society in cybersecurity as well. Mm-hmm. And you know, I am, as Chief Cybersecurity Officer, always concerned and pushing to have diversity, first of all. And I am not only talking about men and women and so on and so forth. I am also talking about ways of thinking. People understanding the business, people understanding the details of the OT, having domain know-how in the OT, people understanding the political environment so that we are better prepared for the threat scenario that we have out there. You know, and the other topic that I support is not only having the people, but hearing the people. Mm-hmm. We have to train our leaders. We are training our leaders so that we can be prepared to manage the diverse teams because it's not easy. And that's a difficult task to do. So we need to be properly prepare our leaders to be able to incorporate all the diversity that we have in the company already. Mm-hmm. So I hope this answers your question, Sabine.
Absolutely. And I agree with you. It's an absolutely important task. And I think it's also an underestimated topic because as you explained that this really lays the foundation that you can be innovative and really can prosper as a society also, that everyone can participate. So do you observe local differences throughout the global regions when we talk about diversity? Like, for example, is the diversity situation in Europe very different from in Asia or US? I guess so, but what's your idea about that?
Yeah, of course, there are many differences. The priorities are different. The difficulties are different. The restrictions the legal requirements are different. Nevertheless, that doesn't prevent a company like Siemens to make sure that everyone feels themselves at work, that everyone feels accepted, and that everyone feels that they belong to the company and that their opinions and contributions are heard. Yes, there are many differences, and yes, we support every different regions with the differences, with the different challenges that they have. But nevertheless, that doesn't prevent us from globally support everyone so that everyone feels that they belong to the company.
Mm-hmm. Also, in the recruitment process, I think this is a very important aspect, that people see Siemens as a diverse employer.
Yeah, exactly. And the recruitment process is itself important in the whole diversity and inclusion, because you need, first of all, hire diverse people. So you have to look among the different communities. But also you need to hire people with this mindset of being inclusive, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So they play a very important role in the whole chain of diversity and inclusion.
Mm. And finally, talking about women in cybersecurity. So diversity is, of course, not all about women, but we talk a lot about women in tech these days. And what are the key levers, in your opinion, to get more female experts in this field?
I think that women, per nature, they want to be as close as possible to the society, to the people in the society, and that's why I think we see women taking decisions toward careers that touches the society directly, like being a teacher or being someone working in marketing or someone in communication, obviously in HR. You know? Mm-hmm. And my thinking is that they don't go to the technology because they see technology far away from society and from touching people's lives. And then what we do and what I'm trying to do is always to make the women aware on how close is technology to society, really.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And especially cybersecurity, I mentioned this time several times more. More than 10 times I've been a society. Because you know what? In cybersecurity, we are, at the end of the day, we're protecting the society. We are protecting our kids from using a self-driving car and using that in a secure way without having any risk that the car will be managed from someone else, you know? So I think by making the women aware that the technology is much closer to society than what they think, I think we can increase the participation of women in cybersecurity. And I can use this podcast to say, we need you. So please come to us.
Yeah. Okay. But you, in a person, are a role model also. Can you maybe share something about your own career? How did that go?
Yeah, I actually started in technology. So I was always fascinated from what technology could do. And at that time, it was not that much as today, to be honest with you. It was many, many years ago. I will not tell you how many. So, and I was always fascinated. So I started my career by studying electronic engineer. And then I was so lucky that I got, in fact, a job. My first job in Volkswagen New Mexico was as a communication expert. So I was the one in charge of setting up the satellite communications between Mexico and the US. And at that time, that was the big deal. I can tell you, it was the only female around doing something like this. So it was so exciting. And then I moved to other technical jobs, mainly in the IT, very much in the IT operations. Finally, like a CIO of some companies in the Volkswagen Group. And then finally, I went into the security topic because the security at that time was not running well in the company I was. And I took over a global project to secure company, and it went very, very well. not only from the company perspective, but from the experience that I did. Because in that topic like cybersecurity, you are not only engaged technically with the different solutions, but you are also engaged in the threat scenario, which is a scenario that includes politics, that includes the understanding of the different motivations of the attackers. And there are many, like financials, like terrorists, like state interests. So I found that cybersecurity was really a holistic topic, engaging several parts of my brain and also my heart. It was always very good to see that we managed to defend the companies. And that's how I got in love as well, not only in technology, but about cybersecurity. And now I am a happy cybersecurity chef, and now as well, diversity and inclusion officer.
Really, thanks for sharing this, because I think it's so important to have role models like you, and also the concrete story of how to get there and not fearing of getting into tech. So this is really an important message. Thank you, Natalia.
Thank you, Sabine.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Natalia, for sharing your thoughts with us today on the podcast. And I have to say thank you again and stay safe.
Yeah, the same goes for you. Thank you, Sabine.
You will find all our episodes at tuvsud.com/podcast. That is tuvsud.com/podcast. Thanks for listening. And of course, stay well and stay safe.
Safety First is produced by TÜV Süd. Editorial support and audio production by Ikone Media.